have this shared. And I know there was a question, like there was a person that questioned, like, well, why is it Frank and not other schools?
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it really came down to demographically, Frank has the highest poverty rate. That was where the connection was, and they wanted to be able to take a program. They really wanted to make sure they were giving back to the local community and not just sending it up to, you know, Milwaukee or Madison to be dispersed. They wanted to make sure it was local.
Got it.
All right. I want to thank my guest, Heather Connolly, for joining us today. Again, if you or someone you know wants to be a sponsor of EBSOLA, call Heather at 262-359-2300, 262-359-2300. For WGTD's Education Matters, I'm Guida Brown.
This is WGTD-HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, and Jenny Tunkis, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Welcome to Community Matters. I'm Jane Herring. Today, we will learn more about the foster care system in Racine County and what it is like to be a foster parent. Our guests today are Jessica Sheeler, who's the foster parent recruitment, retention, and trainer with Racine County, and foster parent Kelly Bartlett. And so I think everybody hears foster care and they have a definition in their minds what that is. We hear foster parents, foster kids, foster families. But really, from your perspective, Jess, what is foster care?
So foster care, I would say, is the greater good of the community, stepping up to take care of its own. And that's just like the, you know, broadest sense of the term, but it's a temporary home for children in crisis. So the general public steps forward and says, hey, I want to help families in their time of need. They go through the licensing process, they work with us. And then if we do have to utilize them, we call, we give them as much information as possible, and they say either yes or no. And then that child is placed in that foster home with that foster parent for however long maybe that case will be until permanency is achieved.
Now that's kind of an interesting part of it, is the how long and permanency. Let's talk a little bit about the how long part. When you are going into a situation where a child needs temporary care, do you have any idea, this one will probably be a few weeks, this one might be a few months, this one might be a year? Do you have any feel for that at the start?
Usually no. So most often, because these are crisis situations, it's that in case of fire, break glass, now I'm calling homes. We don't have at that point really an understanding as to how long it's going to take, because the goal of foster care is reunification. So foster parents have a unique role to play. So not only do they provide that temporary safe space for that child, but they're working with the family in a shared parenting capacity and kind of modeling good behavior and a positive example, ideally, for that parent so that that family can be reunified. And I would say on average, at least current numbers within Racine County show that we have on average kids stay in care about 8 months. But when I receive a call at 2 a.m, I don't know how long that's going to be. And really, Child Protective Services is kind of changing the way they look at placement and utilizing a lot of relatives. So I would say kids enter care, and if it is that 2 o'clock in the morning and no family has been found, we're calling our foster homes. But that child could end up going to an appropriate relative, because once a child enters care, we have to look for appropriate family. If none exists, they stay with that foster parent. And I did say the word permanency, and that's the end of a case. And that kind of looks a few different ways, with reunification being the primary goal, so that family comes back together. But in some cases, they go to a relative and guardianship's established, or, and in a rare case, I would say, parental rights are terminated in that foster parent, or that relative becomes like the adoptive resource. So it could be anywhere from a couple days to forever, depending on the case.
You've mentioned a couple of different things I'd like to follow up on. And one of those, I guess, is that 2 o'clock in the morning call. Is it fairly typical that foster parents don't have a lot of warning and they know what they signed up for? And then, bam, they get a call and there's an immediate need. Is that far more the case than otherwise?
Correct, yes. So people who decide to enter this world are subjecting themselves to the chaos that is what we work with on a daily basis. And that is, you have to be open and flexible and resilient. And yeah, we're calling you when we receive those phone calls. So I like to tell everybody, we're not like Walmart. I don't have children sitting on shelves waiting to be placed into homes, which is ideal and perfect. We, you know, are there to kind of pick up the pieces, and that's where, you know, that foster care component comes into play. When, you know, something horrible has happened and it is that 2 o'clock call, then I'm calling my homes and somebody agrees eventually, once I reach them, to say, hey, sometimes we get calls during the day. I say that, you know, and Kelly can attest to this too. I might shoot out an email if it's like 2 p.m. and say, hey, I have a need right now because somebody's going out for a call. We try, if it is during the day and a case manager is responding to those calls and it looks like we're going to detain, to be proactive. And so we're on the horn earlier than later. But it's, you know, I would say more often than not, those crisis situations where I don't know what time I'm calling you and I don't know the specifics. That being said, when we do receive a phone call, I do ask the case managers, and we ask, like, okay, what's the situation? Why are they being detained? If they're siblings, if they know the school, if they know of any either behaviors or allergies or likes, dislikes, that sort of thing. At 2 o'clock in the morning, for example, most of that's not known. And so you're kind of rolling the dice and saying, sure, I'll take this kid until you find out more information. And I would have to say that most of the time our placements work out, because I don't know, we're good at doing this job, and our foster parents are good at knowing what they can take on. And once we do receive more information, we're providing that to families. And Racine is kind of unique in the respect that foster parents have a lot of built-in supports, where in other organizations or counties, they don't have that. You become a foster parent and then you get a call, and then you're kind of on your own. Whereas in Racine, we have placement support specialists who work with foster families to provide that additional support to make sure they're, you know, continually connected to us, and that we know who they are, they know who we are, that they have a point person to contact in case of emergencies. So there's a lot of pluses to being a foster parent here in Racine.
And I do want to get to more of the details involving that, but I think it's a good time to bring Kelly Bartlett in, who is a foster parent, and talk a little bit about those support services. I do want to talk to you, Kelly, about why you wanted to get involved in foster parenting, but since we're talking about how the county works with you, can you give a few examples of how that has happened and how it's benefited you?
Oh, sure. There's many different support processes in place for ourselves, for the foster kids. There's people at the schools that will help us kind of help the child get acclimated to a new school. For us, with the placements that we've had, we've actually had them switch to go to our school that's in our district. And that was a big change for them, as well as moving into a different home. So we've had people ready at the schools that help to get the child used to their new area. We've had different support services set up where if the child has any needs of any sorts or questions, there's people available to talk to them, as well as people there that are available to answer our questions as we're going through things, or as more information is coming forward that they're finding out about the family or the situation. It's really good open communication with everyone, and Jess has been a great resource for that as well, with being one of those support people that are in place for us foster families.
Jess, could you talk a little bit about your staffing in your department? It sounds like you'd need a cast of thousands, but I put bets on you, it ain't got that.
No, we don't. So our unit is small, but it has grown in the short amount of time that I've been here, which just, I think, continues to show that the best effort to make sure our families are taken care of is there. And so there are two licensing specialists. There is myself, who wears a variety of caps, but I'm the recruitment, retention, and trainer. We have two placement support and family find specialists, our supervisor, and then kinship, which is comprised of two workers who support those kinship families. So
kinship families, can mm-hmm. you?
So kinship is those relatives who receive placement. So for example, it's 2 a.m. and they don't call us because grandma stepped forward to take on grandkids. So she becomes a court-ordered kinship provider and would work with our kinship unit. I touch all, like I work with kinship and I work with foster parents. So the state of Wisconsin in and of itself is unique in the fact that when a relative receives placement, those children are still considered to be foster children. So they receive a kinship payment, but they have to go through the licensing process as well. And so they come through the door as a kinship provider and then work with us to become licensed.
So did you say that is a kind of a state process, or is that something that Racine County has instituted to ensure that that families, extended family members, are equally as well trained as someone like Kelly?
That's the state of Wisconsin has made that a mandate. Mm-hmm. We just, I think, implement it, you know, efficiently.
Sure. Excellent. I'm going to take a step back. I'm trying to keep a linear process, but of course I'm not. I want to get back to, in our minds, we probably all can think of one or two circumstances that would lead to having a child end up in protective services and be in need of a foster family. But can you give us kind of the official list of the reasons why?
So as with everything within this, it varies case by case, but primarily child physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual assault, neglect. Those are reasons why children might be detained. And how that works a little bit is that when somebody suspects that there is that sort of abuse or neglect occurring, they call our access line and they make a report. They give details about the situation, and then those calls are screened in or screened out based on certain criteria. Even if calls are screened out, they don't magically disappear. A file is started on whomever it might be that they had called about. If a call is screened in, a worker goes out and makes an assessment. If there can be several outcomes to that. In a lot of their work, they're trying a strength-based approach to work with families, because ultimately we don't want to have to detain a child, which means remove them from whoever is caring for them, mom, dad, you know, guardian, et cetera, and place them into foster care or through, you know, into the child protective service system. So we work with families to identify strengths first and put protective plans in place if it's appropriate. There are certain thresholds that are met that have immediate present danger. And those are the calls that then come through our department and are, hey, we need to find a home for this child.
I guess one of the other reasons I would have thought would be if one, let's say it's a single family home to begin with, and one parent becomes either because of drug addiction or, you know, some criminal activity, that person is removed from the home. So then the child is without a parent. Is that another circumstance, or is that a whole different ballgame?
Those, yes. So those would be, you know, like neglect cases, because there isn't an adult to care for them. Sometimes that parent hasn't done anything to their child, you know, say they just were doing other things within the community. And so, yes, and in those cases, most often I would say family steps up. We try to locate another parent, because sometimes families aren't forthcoming with information, but a kid might know of somebody. So it is entirely case by case, but those would be other reasons. Yes.
Okay. Approximately how many, foster families do you have? Now, I'm not saying active in terms of having a child now, but are in your collection, your toolbox of families who could accept a child?
That's a great question, because that number recently has changed. So last month, I think we had, close to 90. And so that number is made up of both foster families and those relative kinship providers. Okay. So we have about 60 foster homes and 30 kinship families. I know that number just recently changed because permanency has been established. So we lost, I want to say, like 9 kinship homes. And we've gained a few more foster parents because we just licensed a few more people. So that number is going to go up. So it stays kind of balanced at that 90 mark between our foster, licensed foster homes and our court ordered kinship families.
Okay. And I think I want to switch to Kelly now. I would imagine you're at a shortage, because I see so many signs and billboards around our area. So I think that's a safe bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say ideally, like, our goal is to always constantly maintain 100 foster homes, so licensed homes. So we're at a deficit of about 40. So that's, you know, to give you some perspective on
that's helpful.
Yeah, yes. Looking for.
So, Kelly, you got involved what was it, like 3 or 4 years ago?
Yes, it's been almost 4 years now.
Yeah. And what made you decide to get involved? I know you have your own family of children.
We do. Yeah, we have kids of our own, but foster care is something that I've always been passionate about. When I was a younger mom, I needed all of the people around me to help me succeed. And it was amazing to have this strong support system for my daughter, for myself. But I realized at that point that not everyone had that same strong support system. And I knew that I wanted to be that support structure for others at some point so that I could possibly help other people succeed. And you know, we talk a little bit about a community, and it really does take a community, I think, to make sure that people that are struggling have more ability to succeed and to take care of kids as they need to.
What was the decision-making process within your family, your husband, your kids? How did they feel about it? And how did you come to the conclusion it would work for the whole family?
So that took a little while.
Sure.
As you can imagine, it's a big decision. It really is. And, you know, we have I have an older daughter that is done with college now and has moved away to another state. And we have two biological children of our own in the home. But before we had those last two children, I started having this conversation of, I want to get involved with foster care at some point. And we knew that we could still have our own kids and that, you know, have our family. But we knew that when the time was right, we would know. And as the kids continued to get older and you're going through all the different phases of life and things are busy and changing and stuff, we kind of waited until things felt right. And about 4 years ago, we felt that, okay, this is a good time. We still have our two younger kids are still in the home, but they're older enough where they're no longer in daycare and needing quite as much from us. And we were ready to introduce them to, I guess, some service work in a way by helping out in the community and bringing kids into our home and sharing what we do in our home with others. And took a little bit of convincing with our two boys, and they were a little apprehensive at first, but they've enjoyed the process. I mean, there's ups and downs as with anything, but they've definitely enjoyed the process along the way.
Maybe you could talk about what some of those ups and downs are without obviously mentioning any names or specific situations, but what are some of the challenges and what are some of the joys of it?
Absolutely. So one of the challenges, I think that what people ask us often is, how long will your current placement be with you? You know, it's something that you and Jess talked about earlier. And that's one of those questions that no one can really answer. There's so many variables that go into the length of time that the child is in foster care. So my answer to them has always been, we have no idea how long they will stay with us, but they're welcome to stay as long as needed. And foster care can be hard. It's not perfect. There's a lot of bumps in the road, but I continue to tell people over and over that they should be foster parents. It's worthwhile when you are able to help these kids succeed, and it makes all of the small challenges seem a lot more worthwhile. As far as the joys with it, it's one of the most rewarding things that we've ever done. Seeing a child become healthier, seeing them make friends, make good friendships, find their passions, it's all very rewarding. Having them get to a point where they feel comfortable enough to share their story with us also brings a lot of joy. And then another part of that is getting to know their families. We've gotten very close with some of the family members of our foster placements, and we've been able to help them make better choices, watch them find joy in life as they begin to better themselves, and then watch their children that are placed with us at that time, watch their parents start to succeed. And that definitely brings a lot of joy.
Well, and you just jumped to my next question, because when Jess mentioned that earlier about being involved with the birth family, I'm thinking, whoa, that's a whole different set of involvement. And can you give me any examples? You had told me about how you helped them perhaps make better choices. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's different with every situation. Sure. We had one foster child stay with us for 32 months. And wow. It was a long time, but it started right before COVID. And when COVID hit, everything changed a little bit. I think that foster placements kind of stayed where they were a little bit longer. The court system was a little bit slower on some of the processing of things, and things changed for everybody. And I think that's why that placement ended up being a little bit longer. But over that time, it also gave the one parent in particular time to better himself. During that, he became very close with us. Visits were changed to, instead of in-person visits, they were Zoom visits every week. So we were more involved with being the supervisor then of the child and the parent with the visits. So we got a lot more connection with the parents. And in that situation, there was a grandma and grandpa that was involved, but could not take placement of the child. And there were also other family members, some great aunts and uncles that were involved, and wonderful people that we invited out to our home. We connected with over time, built a great relationship with the father. This placement has not been in our home now since January, but we still remain close with her. She just spent Thanksgiving with us. When her father picked her back up from the house, he said, "You guys can take her whenever you want to. You are a family." And it was just a great connection that we made with that family over that time. And I feel like we should have that. You know, she was with us for 32 months. We're a big part of her childhood. So it's great to remain in her life.
That sounds very exciting, very rewarding. Is that typical, Jess, to have that kind of level of involvement, especially for a little bit longer term placements?
I would say that the trend, is that typical? I would say probably not anywhere but here, because Racine has done a wonderful job of creating that it takes a village mentality. And I've been very fortunate enough that my foster parents came into having that mentality. And a lot of our foster parents have that level of relationship with the families they're working with. Now, it's not perfect. You know, there are bumps, like Kelly mentioned, because you're entering into the deepest, darkest parts of someone's life, where you as the foster parent hold this level of privilege, where now we, the department, have given you all these information about people, and they get to meet you and go, okay, so now you know all the bad stuff about me. And so you're starting backwards within a relationship, and there's a lot of healing that takes place. And I mean, right now our group of foster parents have that mentality. And I think that's why our placement length of time in care is shorter. Our placement stability rate is higher. So placement stability rate is looked at both at the state and federal level. And that looks at how many times a child who's entered care moves around. And in 2021, we had a placement stability rate of 93%, where federally it was 90. So Racine County is kind of killing it with really our foster parents making that connection and, you know, taking that it takes a village mentality. Our reentry rate back into care is the lowest in the state. In 2021, we were at 4%, meaning that after a year, kids entered back into care. Only 4% of our cases had that. Our numbers have reduced. In 2018, there was about 400 kids in care. We sit at, I think, 120 now. There's only 18 kids placed out of county, whereas back in 2018, there was over 100 kids placed out of county. So it's a lot of hard work our community is doing to help really heal itself, which I am tremendously thankful for.
I'm really impressed, and especially about the reentry rate, because you do hear, again, popular media hasn't exactly done foster care any favors, because the things that you hear about, whether it's a new story or a novel or whatever, they tend to focus on the system, and that kids get bounced around to home, and then they go to their parents, and then they get kicked back into the system. And what you're doing is turning those numbers around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would say, yes, the news is meant to do that, right? It wants to grab your attention and make you feel a certain way about a topic. And there isn't a lot of feel good that comes from, you know, the system, right. Because we have to break down a lot of the mythos that surrounds that. And I would say, you know, it is not perfect, and we have to continue to work on it. But I think having, you know, like within my role, I get to reach out to foster parents when a placement goes home and get their perspective as to, you know, what the ups and the downs were, because we can't improve if we don't get that feedback. And I think being more involved in the other minute points that make up the system is what's building a better CPS system. And I think too, we're trying to restructure how that works with having that shared parenting mentality, with having more relatives be involved. There's a lot more positive that is coming from it.
Let's talk about preparation of foster parents. They get certified. Well, most certifications mean that you have to have training beforehand. Let's talk about that process.
It is quite a process, I think, as Kelly can attest to. So folks come in to foster care through me. If anybody is interested, they reach out and say, Jess, I want to know more. And I say, wonderful. And I send out information. I hold information sessions. Our next one is December 21st at 5:30 here at 1717 Taylor. And then after they've made the decision to move forward, they turn in their application. We do a background check and a home safety check, because it's both the provider and the residents that have to become certified. And then once those two things are approved, they come back to me, and I have them go through 36 hours of the state's required initial foster parent training. 6 hours is online. It's made up of various modules that kind of give an introduction to what it is that they're stepping into. Some of the rights that they have, like reasonable and prudent parenting standard, that was written into Wisconsin legislation, I want to say 13 years ago, that gives people that are foster parents the rights to make certain decisions for children, to provide normalcy for them. And then they do the 30 hours in class, in person with me, called foundation training. And that goes way more in depth about trauma and separation and placement and shared parenting and maintaining cultural and family connectedness. And then they meet back up with their licensing specialist who did that, you know, initial background check and home check. And they go through a very intrusive question answer interview process. I say intrusive to forewarn any of your listeners. We ask a lot of personal questions because of several things. A, we're placing a stranger into your home. Two, mm-hmm. you're a stranger to us, and there's a liability that is, you know, placed on us. We have a responsibility if we're detaining someone to make sure that the home we're placing them in, we've thoroughly checked out. And finally, we don't want to re-traumatize anybody. So why I think we've had such success in maintaining placement is because we ask these questions and we get to know our families. So when we call people who we think are going to be good matches from the start, or who can handle the children that we know information about, so that they stay in that one home. So licensing is long. And then after you're licensed, you each year have 10 hours of training or 20 hours total for your 2-year license.
Oh, 2-year. Okay. And then mm-hmm. do it all over again?
You have to just maintain 10 hours annually.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Which we, again, are unique. Racine offers our foster parents 6 hours of training every month. This past year, we did that as a mix of both virtual and in person. And it's really thanks to our, again, that whole It Takes a Village. We've reached out to a lot of community partners who have volunteered either their location or themselves to come provide trainings on various topics that our foster parents have expressed interest in.
So, Kelly, that was a long period of time for you to go through training with your husband. And I know you're both busy people. Was there ever a point where you thought to yourself, ew, boy, what are we getting ourselves into?
You know, I was so ready to do this that it was completely fine for us. So it was almost 4 years ago that we went through our training, and we did like a crash course version of it. They had Saturday trainings, and I believe it was 5 or 6 hours at a time. And we came in every Saturday for a couple Saturdays in a row and got everything done really quickly. And then we finished the rest of our licensing over spring break. 1 year we were managed to meet with the caseworker or the person that was helping to certify our home or license us, you know, kind of get everything in order. And we did our big pile of paperwork and met with her many times throughout that week and got everything put in place. And before the end of that month, we had our first call for our placement for our
first- Oh gosh.
Yeah, it was very fast. It was, the need was still there, you know, 4 years ago that they needed more families in there. And we got everything done really quickly.
So in your home, you have to have certain things ready all the time, a room for that child to move into. And I know you have two boys at home right now. So you get a girl, then what do you do?
Yeah. So luckily we have another bedroom kind of set aside, but we've done plenty of shifting of children over the years with depending on the different kids that we've had in our home. We've had 3 different kids total. 2 of them overlapped each other. So that was the shifting of moving our kids from one bedroom to another, having 2 beds in one room, you know, kind of moving things around. But when people have asked us before, like, how are we preparing our homes or ourselves and stuff to get ready to bring in another kid? I've said the main thing that you need to do is make sure that you're willing to open your hearts. Like, that's the biggest piece of it. You can kind of figure out the logistics for everything as you're getting those calls in the middle of the day or middle of the night or whatever. And you're looking at your kids that are currently in your house and saying, okay, today we're moving bedrooms. Let's get everything, you know, all set up and ready so it's ready for them when they get there.
Well, it sounds like it's been working.
It has been working. Kind of a fun story with this last placement that we have right now is, you know, you don't meet these kids face to face until they're at your front door. And that's when they're meeting you, and there they are, you know, ready to come into your home. And with the current placement that we have right now, he was brought to us and we quickly started asking him some questions and trying to get to know him. And we told him that our youngest son had a birthday coming up that weekend on Saturday. And he looked at us and said, well, I have a birthday this weekend too, but mine's on Sunday. So we had a lot of fun with that because he's one day younger than our youngest son. So it's like,
oh gosh,
yeah, it's like having twins in our home right now. They're in the same grade at school. They play sports together, hang out with the same friend groups. So it's been a really good connection for him that kind of made him feel like he fit in a little bit more right away. It was like a good icebreaker when he first came in. So in every situation's been different, but there's always been something kind of unique with each one of the kids that have entered our home.
And I know you try to get them involved in your, they don't do, how do I, I'm going to try to speak like a person here. You don't exclude them really from any family activities. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's the case completely. We want them to experience everything that we are experiencing for sure. We, you know, get them connected as much as we can with the other kids in the community. We find out about their interests, whether it's sports or band or choir or different groups that they can get involved in, things that they've never been able to do before or had the resources to do before. It just kind of helps them with their new environment. We've taken them camping. We've taken one of them on her first airplane ride to a different state for spring break one year. Just different vacations, new adventures, anything we can do to help expose them to other things in life and kind of open up their eyes to, you know, what they can do as they're continuing to go through all these different changes in life. And I should mention too, that we tend to take older kids. So it's not like the 2 and 3 year olds or little kids that we're doing this with as much. It's our youngest kid that came to stay with us was 9. We've had a 13 year old, and then we've had a 10 year old that was turning 11 that weekend. So the older kids, where it's very important that they do get that, those adventures, those sports, those different, you know, things that they can bring into their lives and learn about.
It sounds like it's been a very positive experience, even with, you know, it's got to be a lot of work as well, just making sure that you're ready and that you're there to help them in a very, well, an awful time for the kids. In our last minute or so, Jess, can you talk a little bit again about step one? What should people do if they're listening here thinking, oh man, this is something we've thought about? What should they do?
They should call me. It's 262-638-6595, or you can email me at jessica.sheeler@racinecounty.com. And Jane, I can send you that if you want to make that available in your tag for the website. But they contact me. They come to an information session. Again, the next one is December 21st at 5:30. And they learn about what it is, and they get their packet of information and application, and they turn that in, and then we'll go on to the background check.
And they don't have to feel on December 21st as if they've signed up. They certainly can move forward from that date. But for those who are kind of on the fence and just really want to learn more, they should feel comfortable coming that day too.
Correct. It is not a commitment. Even when you turn in that application, the commitment part doesn't start until really you say yes, that you want to keep going through this. You might turn in an application, go through training and go, no, and that's fine. But come learn more. Come talk to me.
We've been talking with Jessica Sheeler, foster parent recruitment, retention, and trainer with Racine County, and foster parent Kelly Bartlett. I know I've learned a lot about what Racine County is doing to ensure a positive experience for its children and families, and I hope you have too. Thanks for joining me today on Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click Shows. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Hello, I'm Steve Brown, inviting you to join us on Saturday morning, December 17th at 11:15 for the WGTD Radio Theater's rebroadcast of the Carol Burnett Holiday Show, starring Anne-Marie Schmidt as Carol Burnett. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dume, and McTernan. The Radio Theater, Saturday morning, December 17th at 11:15.
Well, this week on WGTD's Christmas Noon Tunes, we're featuring songs from Kenosha's Tremper High School choirs under the direction of Polly Amborn, including the Tremper.